Now that brings us to chapter 6. And chapter 6 is probably the most familiar chapter in the Bible. And it's Daniel in the lion's den. And this is the one that you hear so much about. And very frankly, friends, had you ever stopped to think of it? That Daniel only spent one night in the lion's den? He spent a lifetime from a boy of 17 till he's about 90 in the palace of the king, and it was more dangerous to live in that palace as this man Daniel did than it was to spend a night in the lion's den. Actually, those lions down there couldn't touch him. But yonder in the palace, he was in constant danger. And yet we like to talk about Daniel in the lion's den. I'd like to talk about Daniel in the palace of Nebuchadnezzar, and then of Nabonidus, and then of Belshazzar, and then of Darius the Median, and then of Cyrus the great ruler. He was in constant danger because those men were pagan men, and he had the privilege of leading some of them to the Lord. So actually, he only spent one night in a lion's den. Well, we're going to look at it because it has a message for us today. Now, will you notice, chapter 6 is the decree of Darius, the Median. Now, we've moved up a long way. You see, we move from Nebuchadnezzar to Belshazzar. Now, from Belshazzar, we move out of the Babylonian kingdom, now to the Medo-Persian Empire, to enforce the worship of himself. These rulers are always very modest. They wanted to be worshipped. And Daniel is cast into the lion's den for praying to the God of heaven. Now, I would like to give you just something now by way of introduction to get us ready for next time. And as we've indicated, that this is the most familiar chapter in the book of Daniel. And he spent one night in his long life in the lion's den. Now, the chapter concludes this strictly historical section of the book of Daniel. And the episode in Daniel's life, which it records, is another illustration of the keeping power of God, and it's another adumbration of the way in which God will protect the remnant during the great tribulation period. This is a counterpart of chapter 3, where God preserved the three friends of Daniel in the fiery furnace. Here God protects Daniel. Now, if there's a question as to the whereabouts of Daniel in chapter 3, there is a question now as to the whereabouts of the three Hebrew children in this chapter. Surely they would have followed Daniel. Perhaps since there's a lapse of time here, they're no longer living. Chapters 3 and 5 give two aspects of the preservation of the remnant, both of Israel and of the Gentiles, in the great tribulation period. That makes this very important. And by the way, it has a message for us today, because we're told, be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, is a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. And, you know, I live in a lion's cage. And that lion's cage I live in is this world. And there's a big roaring lion going up and down the cage that I'm in today, and you're in it. And nobody's given us any medal for it, are they? But that's where we are today. Now, I want to begin reading here at verse 1. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom and over these three presidents, of whom Daniel was first, that the princes might give accounts unto them, and the king should have no damage. Now we move ahead again historically in the book. The chapter opens now with Babylon, the head of gold, has now disappeared. It's been removed from the number one spot as a world power. And now instead of Babylon, we have the Medo-Persian Empire, and that was represented by the arms of silver that we had in the dream that Nebuchadnezzar had. Now, you see, we've come to Darius, and he is the Darius Cyaxares is the second of secular history. He ruled only 2 years, and Cyrus was the son of Darius's sister, Mandane, and Cambyses, the Persian. And that brought together the Media-Persian Empire, and it now is in power and the world ruler. Now we have the position of Daniel under Darius the Mede here. And we find out that we have another empire, but we also have Daniel in the number one spot of being a prime minister. But you'll notice, as we suggested when we looked at that multimetallic image, the head of gold and silver, brass, iron, iron and clay, that there's deterioration any way you look at it, deterioration in position, deterioration in the type of metal. And we find now that the inferiority is quite noticeable. Nebuchadnezzar, his reign, as we said, was autocratic and absolute. He did not share authority with anyone. And now Darius here, we're told, has 120 princes who shared the responsibility of rulership with him. And over this group, he placed three presidents who were liaison officers between the princes and the king. And so you have here a distribution of responsibility and rulership. And we're told that they had this position, these three, Daniel was one of them, that the king should have no damage. That suggests that the presidents were to prevent the princes from stealing or undermining the king in any way. Now, Daniel is number one of the three presidents, and I take it that he was a man at this time about 80 years of age. And now I read verse 3 of the 6th chapter of Daniel. Then this Daniel was preferred above the presidents and princes, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king thought to set him over the whole realm. Now he not only had seniority, but he had superiority, an excellent spirit. This means that Daniel was a spirit-filled man, and the king had such confidence in him that he placed him next to himself in position and power. Now we have here, verses 4 to 9, the plot of the presidents and princes to destroy Daniel. This is something that always you find in politics, you find it in churches, you find it, I think, today in probably any business concern. You find it in schools, you find this everywhere, and even it creeps into the home. And that is jealousy of those that are at the top, jealousy of those that are in the top position. And now I'm reading verse 4 of the 6th chapter of Daniel. Then the presidents and princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find none occasion nor fault. Far as much as he was faithful, neither was there error or fault found in him. Now, there is one thing for sure, that when you find yourself the number one man in any position today, whether it be in politics, in the church, or actually in the home and in the school, you are the one that those that have a jealous spirit are going to be watching. And if there is a flaw in your life, and if you have an Achilles heel, they are going to determine and discover that weak spot, and that may be used against you. Now, Daniel had a remarkable life back of him. They could not find anything in this man's character or anything in his past life that they could seize upon and make something of. Now, there's been many a politician wish that he'd lived a little differently and acted a little differently. And that's true of men. And I mean by that, mankind generally. But today, a child of God ought to live at the charges which inevitably will be leveled against them will be a lie. Now, you can't keep people from talking about you, but you can so live as to make them liars when they do talk about you. And that is the thing that we are enjoined as believers. Paul said to the Philippians in Philippians 2:15, that ye may be blameless and harmless, the sons of God, without rebuke in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation, among whom ye shine as lights in the world. And then in Acts 24:16, and herein do I exercise myself, to have always a conscience void of offense toward God and toward man. In other words, Paul could lie down at night and go to sleep and not have a bad conscience troubling him. That ought to be true of every believer, a bad conscience. Someone has said that a conscience is something that only a good man can enjoy, and it certainly is true. Now I'm reading verse 5 of the 6th chapter of Daniel. Then said these men, we shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God. Now, Daniel was different. God had made his people different. And he, of course, in his religious practices, when he first was brought down as a boy, a slave, in the court of Nebuchadnezzar, why, he asked for a different diet. And from then on, the life of Daniel just happened to be different. Now, these men are aware of that. They said, if we're going to find anything wrong with him, we're going to have to find it in his religion. And then that meant when they say wrong, they mean something they can accuse him of before the king. And so the only vulnerable spot, therefore, in Daniel, as these politicians saw it, was his religion. And this is certainly a case of his good being evil spoken of. And they knew that Daniel was faithful to God and that he was dependent upon it and that his prayer life was quite something that was well known. Therefore, they are now going to have to draw a conflict between the king and Daniel's religion. And that's what they're going to do. Verses 6 and 7 now of the 6th of Daniel, and I'm reading these two verses. Then these presidents and princes assembled together to the king and said thus unto him, King Darius, live forever. All the presidents of the kingdom, the governor and the princes, the counselors and the captives have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whosoever shall ask a petition of any god or man for 30 days, save of thee, O king, he shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, this, you see, is a very subtle plot of these princes and presidents and petty politicians. Now, King Darius was a good man. I think that's obvious in secular history, and I think that is certainly the implication of Daniel here. But he had a vulnerable spot. And I think many of us have it. And that was, it was his vanity. He yielded to flattery. And a great many people do that. I think one of the tragedies today is that we have many Christians, especially Christians of means, and they only give to those organizations where the leader of the organization flutters them up, flatters them. And now, I'm not just talking through my hat, because I know this. I have been now in several places and have met some of these people. They're very fine Christians, but they have that weakness of just being flattered. And we were at dinner with some friends, and I won't say any more other than they told about this Christian leader had been there and said how wonderful they were, and this other Christian leader. And I said to my wife when we left that evening, I said, if I have to stoop to flattering people in order to run the Through the Bible radio program, I'll go off the air. I said, God's going to have to speak to people's heart. And I personally think today that it brings the cause of Christ into disrepute and disgrace when there are those who will stoop to flatter and those that will stoop to listen to it and be carried away by that. I long time ago discovered that I'm not as bad as my enemies say I am, and I'm not nearly as good as my friends say that I am. And so there's always that danger of being flattered. I used to tell the boys in seminary, I said, fellas, I don't care how sorry you are as a preacher, and I don't care what church you go to, the Lord always has in all of these places some dear lady, and she's going to tell you how wonderful you are. And I said, there'll be one of them that'll come up to you after you preach one of the lousiest sermons in the world. And she'll say, my, I think you're another Dwight L. Moody on the scene. And I said, now that's nice to have dear ladies like that that want to encourage you. But I said, young man, the danger of that is don't believe them. Just don't believe them, because there's danger if you do. May I say to you that they flattered this man, and he yielded to it. And so he thought, my, this is great. And he drafted a bill, and they made a statue of the king, and he's elevating himself to the position of deity. Prayers only to be offered to him. Verses 8 and 9, now the sixth of Daniel. Let me read this. Now, O king, establish the decree, sign the writing, that it be not changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which offereth not. Wherefore, King Darius, sign the writing and the decree. He yielded, you see, to his weakness. And now there is this decree that's gone out, signed by the king, and it can't be changed. Even the king of the Medes and Persians can't change it after it's passed. So it puts Daniel in a bad spot. Now, will you notice the prayer of Daniel and the accusation of the presidents and princes? We begin at verse 10 of the sixth chapter of Daniel. Now, when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, and his windows being open in his chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime. Now notice the reaction of Daniel to this new law. He did not do anything that was audacious or foolhardy when he opened those windows. He'd been doing it for years. And in other words, he just didn't back down. He did not act in a cowardly and compromising manner by closing the windows. He just went about his usual prayer life. And I would like to say that he kneeled. Someone says, what is the proper posture of prayer? I doubt whether that's the important thing. It was Victor Hugo who said years ago that the soul, it's on its knees many times, regardless of the position of the body. And I think that is the important thing, is the posture of the spirit of man. But if you want a posture, it's kneeling, and you have that set before us here. And you'll notice he prayed toward Jerusalem. That was the direction of Daniel's life. And he didn't intend to change it in the latter days. Prayed toward Jerusalem. And may I say that we're living in a day when the Lord says, neither in yonder Mount Gerizim or in Jerusalem will man worship God, but you worship him today in spirit and in truth. That is the important thing. Now, I continue to move on. I'd love to stay there and talk about this matter of prayer, but we must move on. Verse 11, then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. You see, they were waiting for him, and it was really a compliment. They had a feeling, he had the reputation that he would not back down, and he didn't. Verse 12 now. Then they came near and spake before the king concerning the king's decree. Hast thou not signed a decree that every man that shall ask a petition of any god or man within 30 days, save of thee, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. The king answered and said, things true, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which altereth not. Well, they called attention to the fact that Daniel was disobeying. He was with an open window praying toward Jerusalem. And believe me, it was something that distressed the king. We're told in verse 14, then the king, when he heard these words, was sore displeased with himself and set his heart on Daniel to deliver him. Now, he can't change his own law. Nebuchadnezzar could have, but not now. You see, there's deterioration down to where we are today. Verse 15, then these men assembled unto the king and said unto the king, know, O king, that the law of the Medes and Persians is that no decree nor statute which the king established may be changed. And so now Daniel is going to be put in a lion's den. Nothing the king can do about it. Now we have verse 16. Then the king commanded, they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. Now the king spoke and said unto Daniel, thy God, whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee. And I'm of the opinion the king didn't believe that. I think that that was one of these half-hearted things that some of us saints say today. We say to somebody else, oh, the Lord will take care of you. And when you and I get in that predicament, we don't quite trust him like that. Now, this king, though, has come a long way. He recognizes that the God of Daniel was omnipotent and sovereign. He could deliver him. And he also saw that Daniel was faithful to God. Daniel's testimony in the dissolute court of two world powers is nothing short of miraculous. And his unaffected and unassuming life was a powerful witness to the saving grace of God in that day. Well, they put a stone against the mouth of the lion's den, and Daniel spent the night down there. Now, these lions were fierce and wild beasts. They were not toothless lions. I remember years ago that there was a man that got a job in a zoo, and they wanted him to go in the lion's cage to feed the lions. And he said, no. And the keeper says, look, said, those lions are toothless. And he said, yes, says, I noticed that, but he said, they could gum me to death. Well, these lions had teeth, and they were fierce lions, but the safest place that night just happened to be the lion's den. And I think Daniel got a pretty good night's sleep down there. And the interesting thing is, it was the king that was in danger more than Daniel. Now, will you notice verse 18? Then the king went to his palace, passed the night fasting. He didn't sleep. Daniel did. Neither were instruments of music brought before him, and his sleep went from him. He passed a sleepless night due to his concern for Daniel. Then in verses 19 and 20, then the king arose very early in the morning and went in haste unto the den of lions. When he came to the den, he cried with a lamentable voice unto Daniel. And the king spoke and said to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, is thy God whom thou servest continually able to deliver thee from the lions? Well, I don't know whether the king expected Daniel to answer, but Daniel answered. And Daniel said to the king, O king, live forever. And he said, did you have a good night? And of course, the king didn't have a good night. Daniel had a good night. And now verse 23, then was the king exceedingly glad for him, commanded they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no manner of hurt was found upon him, because he believed in his God. Now we find Daniel lifted to a very high position. And we're told, the last verse, so this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. And that is the man also that Daniel led to a knowledge of the living God. This man Daniel is one of the great men of Scripture. Now, next time, we go to the prophetic section. So, until then, may God richly bless you, my beloved.